This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by FreshBooks, offering a free 30-day unrestricted free trial to our listeners. To claim it, go to freshbooks.com/CG and enter Current Geek in the How Did You Hear About Us section. And by Aero. Never think about Wi-Fi again when you can have brilliant, hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi systems with Aero. And now the second generation Aero is tri-band and twice as fast as its predecessor. For free overnight shipping, visit Aero.com and check out. And when you do, select overnight shipping and then Current Geek. And by HelloFresh. Receive $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK30. That's CURRENTGEEK30 at HelloFresh.com.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the weekly proceedings and the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. With the one, the only, and never the lonely, Tom Merritt.
Happy Life Day, Scott.
Oh, is that today?
Yeah.
No. I thought it was
today
national.
Today is the anniversary, according to IMDb and Strike It Rich One on our subreddit, 1978, November 17th, the Star Wars special.
Oh, very nice. And are you excited to celebrate with us today on Current Geek? Is that okay? Is it a good place to do it?
Sure am, Scott, because I don't think there's anything bad about that special. Not one little thing. No, I have fond memories of watching that as a kid. It doesn't hold up in the same way over time.
Yeah, but the
you
fact,
still kind of enjoy it in a weird different way.
But the fact that you and I at age 7 or 8 or whatever saw that and were okay with it because I was the same.
Yeah.
I think maybe that says a whole bunch about why we shouldn't have been so upset that the prequels weren't exactly what we thought we were going to get. Because what we liked as kids is not what we like as adults. And maybe George Lucas is right this whole time. He's making it for who needs it and who most benefits from it. And we gave him too hard of a time. I don't know. Maybe we'll buy him a new turtleneck. We'll have to see. Just to say we're sorry.
Happy Life Day. That's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Let's also introduce our guests. There is no Current Geek without guests. And we're so happy to introduce them today. From the Hero Movie Podcast, let's start with Adam Portes. Am I saying your name right? Portes? Portes.
Yeah, well, most people would say that I have Portes, so I would maybe say you're probably right there. But, however, Portress. Just rhymes with Portress. Easy to remember that way. Or at least I learned that only at like 18 years old, where it was took forever to figure out how to tell people. And then somebody's like, oh, like Fortress. I'm like, oh, you jerk.
Yeah, you bastards.
Just saved me 18 years worth of of trying to figure stuff out.
Well, it's great to have you here. We'll learn more about your show a little bit later, and I'm stoked to have you and your co-host here because you guys both understand what it's like to have a nice microphone coming into this so we don't have to fight a bunch of audio problems. The one with the beard is next. It's Bruce Leslie. I know I'm saying that right. Also from the Hero Movie Podcast. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's Leslie just like Wesley.
Got
That's
it.
What I learned when I was older. But yeah, happy to be here, man. Big
I thought you were going to say, it's spelled Leslie, but it's pronounced Sean.
Listen, I get a lot of weird pronunciations wrong in this world. In fact, I'm probably even saying that wrong. Probably pronunciation is more correct. Who knows? But I do it anyway, and it's kind of part of the fun. So welcome to my world. And it's good to have you both here.
Big fan. Glad to be here.
Well, great. We may as well dive in, and we do that every week with these headlines.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom Merritt, I am dying to know what happened in the last week.
Well, don't die, Scott, because we've got all the news you need right here. In fact, Legal Geek's going to cover this a little more, too. Twitter said it has stopped accepting submissions for verification of, the little blue check marks and is introducing new guidelines for accounts to maintain verification. It's also begun a review, and under the new guidelines will remove verification from accounts that don't follow its rules or promote hate or violence, engage or incite in harassment, or intentionally mislead people by changing the name or the bio. Several accounts have had verification removed under these new protocols, and Twitter said it is also working on a new authentication and verification program altogether.
I'm worried that I'm going to get mine revoked, not because I'm doing any of the things that you just listed there, but because it came to me out of the blue. I didn't apply for it. I don't know why I got it. It just happened. I'd kind of resigned myself to I'd probably never get verified, so who cares? It doesn't matter. I'm still talking to my peeps. Doesn't matter. But then suddenly one day, you're verified.
Yeah.
So I hope there's not some other clause that says, yeah, and those people we just randomly gave verification to because it seemed like they had enough followers or enough, whatever. Well, we're taking them away too. We'll see if I fall into that category.
I think the weird thing is, I mean, the whole point was to be able to tell the difference between a fake account and the actual legitimate account. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere along the way, it became like a status symbol, like an internet famous badge of honor. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, I've never been we're verified on Facebook, which is weird because I didn't know they did that till Adam.
Well, I listen, that's only because I just applied for the thing and it's like, it's 2 seconds. They're like, hey, show us that you're not like, you know, a robot. And I was like, all right, sure. And then they're like, hey, you got a blue check. I'm not going to lie. It does feel like you feel like you're important there. But as far as Twitter goes, you know, I've been on Twitter since just about the beginning of the whole darn thing. But for me, it's the punk rock in me, and punk rock and Groucho Marx that says I wouldn't want to belong to any club that would have me as a member. So,
yeah.
And the strange thing with me is I feel like I probably am the fake Bruce Leslie. So I wouldn't push the whole verification thing too hard. Like yeah. there's a Bruce Leslie who's far more accomplished than I am. So I never paid too much attention to the blue check mark, but I guess it's, you know, just wraps into this whole alt-right thing.
Here's the other hitch for this for me, and Tom, I'd love to hear your feedback on this, but my feeling is it did start out as a way of saying who is the real version of this person and who is not the real version of that person. So if an actor who's very popular and has a bunch of parody accounts about them, it'd be nice to know which one was the real one, and that was the original idea. It just seems like they were so slow to do it for anybody else that didn't match up with, well, obviously Dwayne The Rock Johnson gets verified, and there's a lot of in between, and it took longer. It felt like a status thing. They started to build it up like almost like this elusive award that you would get for being cool somehow on Twitter. So I kind of feel like this is Twitter's fault.
It's definitely Twitter's fault.
Okay.
I think you're being very charitable in giving them benefit of the doubt that this started as just a way to verify people. When this kicked off, it was the Silicon Valley digerati who got it. The idea was, hey, we're mad that this person's pretending to be me and I'm a famous vlogger. And so they started giving verified checks to the people they knew around the Bay Area and elsewhere. Then, of course, as Twitter got more popular, they started giving it to celebrities. They started to give it as a status symbol from the beginning, and that's why it's perceived that way. Mm. Even though there is a very real need for it to work exactly like Facebook, which is, hey, I just want to prove that I'm this person and not a fake account. And that's all, in my opinion, that's all they should do. Just turn this thing into a black box, change the look of it so you break that perception and say, you know, you're going to get a really ugly V next to your name that says this is actually the real person. And it's not a badge of honor. It's just used to tell that, like, we went through some procedure, whatever that is.
Yeah. I'm guessing
one of those for a really long time, but it was not a badge of honor. It was not.
Sure. But here's the thing. Like, if you have to do it for some, you have to do it for everybody. Right. So if Twitter is expected to grow, I kind of get that it's a pain for them to have systems in place.
You know who's bigger than Twitter? Facebook. You know who does it exactly the way I described? Pretty much Facebook.
Yeah. But does Facebook make more money and therefore can justify the cost of verifying people? You know what I mean?
I don't think that's the problem.
Yeah.
I don't know that cost is a big deal. Yeah. I really don't.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm not trying to minimize the effort that has to go into it, but Twitter actually doesn't do badly on revenue side, and making money isn't what's the problem.
And also, okay, one final thing and then we can move on. Isn't there some value in okay, so let's say some Nazi person gets on, and we're not going to get political on the show, but somebody gets on, he's a total Nazi head.
Just said the word Nazi.
Yeah, but okay. And he's calling for all sorts of really controversial Nazi type things. To me, Nazi isn't controversial. It's just straight up a thing. So right.
It should not be controversial to be that Nazis are bad.
Right. Let's it shouldn't be. Somehow it is, but it shouldn't be. So let's say somebody does that. Am I actually served better knowing that that is a verified person being that Nazi?
No, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm totally with Scott on this one. I mean, if somebody, you know, says, hey, let's kill all the Swedish people on Earth, I want to know who said that. I don't want somebody impersonating me saying that.
Scott and I particularly are going to have a problem.
Yeah. I'm Swedish descent with Tom, but B, my sister,
non-controversial.
My sister lives in Sweden. I don't want her to get mistaken for an actual Swede. Also, I don't want Swedish people to die.
No,
I love Swedes, by the way. On the record,
I
love Swedes.
Swedes. I don't know. They got
not an Swede show. IKEA is some of our favorite friends.
That's right. That's right. Easy to assemble.
Big fan of Vikings over here.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm sure none of this is insulting to Swedes either.
Never.
No, but to your point, exactly. If somebody's out there, you know, calling for something horrible, it would be good to know that it would be good. It's transparency to know who that person is and right. be able to assign blame or credit or whatever to that person for saying.
Yeah. And I hope that that's where they're headed. So we'll see. Time will tell.
Amazon announced it has acquired the global TV rights to Lord of the Rings and intends to produce a multi-season TV series in cooperation with New Line Cinema, Tolkien Estate, and HarperCollins. So they're all going to team up on this. The series will explore storylines preceding The Fellowship of the Ring. So they're not going to cover what's been done in the movies. I guess The Hobbit precedes The Fellowship of the Ring, but I'm pretty sure that's not what they meant. Yeah. Also includes the rights to a possible spinoff series. That's just an option I bet they have in case this first series does well. 93-year-old Christopher Tolkien has been very adamant against these sorts of things. In fact, if the rights hadn't already belonged to Warner, I don't think he would have allowed the movies to be made by Peter Jackson. He, however, has retired from managing the Tolkien estate as of August 31st, hence this Amazon deal. What do you guys think?
Wow.
I think he's lazy, not getting up at 93 years old in the morning and just putting your nose to the grindstone. What a slob.
Yeah.
Well, there's a couple things I'd like to address. First off, like the time period. I've always been curious about the interim. You know, when The Hobbit ends and when Lord of the Rings starts, there's a whole lot of Sauron building up some kind of mechanism for war. There's a whole lot of nefarious stuff that's going on in the background that hasn't been addressed. You go pre-Hobbit with the Silmarillion stuff. I'm not as interested in that. But I could really get into this interim thing, and I don't know how true it is, how much of it's rumor, but I've heard that we won't get Bilbo or Frodo in this series, so it's going to be kind of the political world of Middle Earth in the interim period when the decline of the Age of Heroes and the rise of the Age of Man is all going on. And I personally love fantasy. I'm all for it. I'll take bad fantasy over no fantasy. I mean, I like the Hobbit trilogy more than most folks.
Yeah, I'm going to side with you on this. Bruce, and I would say this, if clearly this is Amazon saying, you know, we got a bunch of money. HBO passed on this, I guess, is what I read somewhere. And I wish I had that in front of me so I could verify it.
Netflix also.
Yeah, Netflix also. And you could see why in the case of HBO, they're already knee deep.
Sources say, sure.
But they're so knee deep in Game of Thrones and everything else. The nice thing about Game of Thrones was when that hit, lots and lots and lots of people had no idea where it was coming from. It was a fresh new series. And they may have sensed some roots in other things, even Lord of the Rings for that matter. But it was never like, oh, finally, this book that was a household name is making it to the small screen. I think most people, as a guess, but I think most people had no idea what the Lord of the Rings was or what Game of Thrones was. In this case, you're talking about a household, many decades old property that we made into hit movies. We all know very well. Many of us remember the weird rotoscoped animation things from when we were kids. Like, we've read those books, like, it's been part of our lives in such a meaningful way, and it's informed D&D and video games and everything else just to the hilt.
Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. I guess what I'm worried about is there's going to be a temptation on their part to make sure that there's some fan service in there. And I really don't, I hope they don't do that. What I want is a story that is about characters we don't know yet. You don't need a cameo from freaking Frodo or Bilbo for me to like it. Like, that's what I really hope they focus on. I don't want this to be just a parade of, remember this, remember this, remember this. That's where this guy came from. I mean, we think we like that, but I'm kind of done with that these days. I want some, like the new Star Wars trilogy and some of the other stuff that's coming up. I want those things to branch out and find new ground and tell, if not brand new stories, at least stories that they haven't been telling in that universe. So that's where my hopes lie.
I think a Lord of the Rings Rogue One could be great, man. Mm-hmm. As long as they don't focus on Mary, I'll be okay with it. But like the thing I think about this, you know, I'm a huge fan of all the fantasy stuff. I love Game of Thrones. I love the books. I love the TV show, but I can't watch this TV show with my kids. But Lord of the Rings, I think, is something I could share with my kids, and we could watch it, you know, on Sunday night or something. And I really think it'd be a good thing for a whole lot of folks out there. And if you don't like it, you don't watch it. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. Amazon's got the money to burn, and if they want to do it, I'm going to support it at least initially and give it a chance.
Yeah. Adam, what's your take?
I don't think there's any middle ground to this at all. This
middle
thing
earth,
is
but no middle ground.
Nice.
But I don't, there's no way. It's either going to be ridiculously good and everyone's going to love it, or it's going to be absolute dog trash. It can't, there's going to be nowhere in the middle. It's just, I don't see, it's either going to go like prequel level and we all just want to burn it to the ground, or the original, you know, Lord of the Rings trilogy, man. So it's a gamble, but hopefully it's a gamble that'll actually pay off.
Yeah, it's a gamble. It's a $250 million gamble. But I guess all I'm saying is, with a world where we have a million things and we're getting the comic book movies we all thought we wanted, and we're getting Star Wars again and announcements of that coming back to TV, Star Trek just returned to TV, like all of this stuff, so much competition for our allegiances to specific series. And I just hope that they can do this in a way that is new enough and fresh enough, but also makes me go, oh yeah, it's Lord of the Rings. It's venerable. It'll never go away. Because we really got, we got bombarded with Lord of the Rings in the aughts, like just slammed with Lord of the Rings constantly.
You know, you talking made me think what they could do that would be very successful is focus on the first war. Mm. Focus on Sauron after he's given the rings to the Nine Kings, and the lead up to that war. That would be huge. It's something we've seen glimpses of in the movies, granted, but there's so many characters that give you fan service because, hey, that's the Steward of Gondor's dad, or, you know, that's or not dad, I guess, but, you know, that's his ancestor. Mm-hmm. and Aragorn's ancestor. And that would be cool because you'd be seeing them, but they would also still be new characters and a very compelling story.
Could be, but are you worried that like some of the elves are still alive, right? So some of
those guys. Fine. Show me Galadriel. Show me Legolas. That's cool, actually, because the elves and men team up in this, and it's going to be an entirely different dynamic. This is where the elves fall out of love with the world of men. That's going to be fun to watch too.
But if it's not Cate Blanchett and it's not Orlando Bloom, does that throw you at all?
Bloom is free. Don't worry.
Yeah, I was about to say that I am totally, totally open to recasting, new casting. We understand this is a different franchise, a different medium. I think you got to recast it because I don't necessarily know that I want to see Orlando Bloom playing himself as 300 years younger.
Yeah, listen, man, the guy's got to pay his mortgage. Just let him do what the role he can do, for heaven's sake.
Sure. I'm worried about prequels.
I'm a young Orlando Bloom.
the prequel thing is always a little precarious, though, too, because you know the outcome. So the story you need to tell needs to kind of have its own beginning and ending anyway, and not just lead up to a thing you already know the answer to.
Well, that's why the war works for me, because even though you know it's coming, you know, the lead up to it is very compelling. How did that actually happen? How did the Nine Kings really get tempted away? Were they good? Were they bad? There's a lot of questions there to be explored.
Hadn't thought about that. Fairness, that's actually pretty good. Yeah.
In all fairness, any adaptation, we know where it ends up.
Mm-hmm. So, well, that's true.
I knew how Lord of the Rings was going to end.
That's true. But like Game of Thrones, well, actually, Game of Thrones is unique in this one way. You may have known how each book was going to end, but you don't know where the series is going to end because they're already in new territory that the books don't cover. So, like, HBO got lucky across the board in lots of ways, I think. This is just so much expectation. People who like the Peter Jackson treatment are going to expect that. If they don't get that, you know, what does that mean? It's also a streaming service only. It's a good one, but it's, you know, this isn't necessarily HBO. You don't have quite the eyeballs. I don't know. I'm really curious about it. Bring it on. Let's watch it. We'll judge it based on its merits, even its Tom merits.
All right. So this week, Rotten Tomatoes took a lot of flack for delaying the release of the tomato meter score for Justice League because they want to reveal it on a new show called See It, Skip It, which is from the video department at Rotten Tomatoes, which is run by my wife. So just full disclosure right there.
Best idea ever. I had
a lot of discussions around the house about this one. Yeah. But if you want to know the facts of what happened, not me telling you what to think about what happened, essentially the NDA for Justice League released on Wednesday morning. Normally what happens is as soon as everybody publishes their reviews, the Rotten Tomatoes folks go and they count up all the reviews and assign them a fresh or a rotten score. And then they publish their score sometime Wednesday morning. Hmm. They announced that they wouldn't be publishing it sometime Wednesday morning. They'd be publishing it at midnight Wednesday or Thursday morning on See It, Skip It, because that's their new Facebook show. And of course, Facebook loves that, you know, push people to watch the show, more streams. That's great. People talked about it as if they were delaying it for days. They delayed it probably at most a half a day, maybe a full day, depending on how you look at it. But it did come out 9 p.m. Pacific on the show. Mm. So there's what happened.
All right. That's good. No, and if that was a very non-biased retelling of the tale. I appreciate that. I will say this, though.
See It, Skip It is a great show, and Robin and Shingoon are awesome.
it really is.
Jacqueline Ichigo.
There you go.
See, I don't know who Robin is.
This is how unbiased you are. You're just throwing people in that don't exist. And I totally trust this. 39% currently, by the way, on Rotten Tomatoes. Not looking great for this new installment of the DC Universe. But regardless of all of that, it is interesting what people's expectations of a website can become. And if you break with tradition, by that meaning, you know, scores are going up after, even if it's only a few hours after what they would normally do. Man, if I've learned anything on the internet, is none of these people like change.
And I think one thing that's real important to get out there is this wasn't a Warner Brothers embargo, because that's how the news was received. You know, we have our own group of folks that are all about these kind of movies, and it was perceived as a Warner Brothers embargo. But those individual reviews were out there. I read a review from Variety, one from Rolling Stone. I mean, the reviews were out there. This was a decision internally from Rotten Tomatoes, and they can do whatever they want.
There is an embargo on the reviews from DC for Wednesday morning at 2 a.m.
Right.
The Rotten Tomatoes delay was, okay, as soon as that embargo lifts, we're not going to publish that tomato meter in the normal few hours that we would take to assemble all of those review scores. It was, we're going to reveal it that night on See It,
which is their prerogative. Like, it's their website. I could never get mad at this. Now, I might, as a user, go, well, it'd be great if I could see it earlier or whatever before I go see this thing or whatever. But it's not like Rotten Tomatoes has some law they're following here and they broke it on this one. Yeah. It's just them getting to do what they want with the website. I it's hard for me to get behind everybody who wants to make a mountain out of a molehill.
But here, amongst the DC fans, which there are a few out there, the Warner Brothers DC movies fans, there are a few out there. And going all the way back to BVS, there's sort of been this kind of tinfoil hat type conspiracy that Rotten Tomatoes is all in with Disney, Marvel, and all against Warner Brothers DC. And choosing this movie to hold it off could be kind of misinterpreted by some folks. And, you know, there's always the question of, where do those sort of middle of the road reviews, when do they get counted as positive? When do they get counted as negative? So there's a lot of conspiracy stuff specifically about the DC Warner Brothers stuff and Rotten Tomatoes. So maybe they would have debuted with Thor Ragnarok. This wouldn't have happened.
Well, they did debut with Thor Ragnarok, but they couldn't delay the Thor Ragnarok score for the show because that score was NDA lifted way too early.
Yeah, because they also premiered in Europe and stuff like a week.
Well, also, yeah, and it was like, I don't remember exactly the day, but it was something like the NDA lifts on Friday. We're not going to hold it all the way to the next Thursday.
Right, I can totally understand.
But with the NDA lifting on Wednesday morning, they thought, well, that's close enough.
Yeah,
maybe Daddy's Home 2 would have been a good place to start.
Maybe
that's precisely what I was about to bring
Daddy's
up.
Daddy's Home 2 was one of the tomato meters they revealed on a previous episode.
Maybe you're wife should hire me. I've got all these great ideas.
You're nailing it here.
You either did it too early or too late. I think like when this finally hits the big prominence, it is of this movie that has had within the pantheon of all the DC movies and stuff, have had some fairly, you know, to some people, very controversial scores to go along with them. And so it feels like they're hiding. They may not be, but it feels to people like, oh, what are you trying to hide from me here? What's going on?
Yeah, but they're not. See, if you guys are telling me the internet's full of conspiracy theories, gosh, I just don't know what to do with that information. But secondly,
we should point out because we haven't stated it clearly here, and I know you were hitting around about it. Warner Brothers is a minority owner in Fandango. Fandango is the company that owns Rotten Tomatoes. And NBC is the majority owner, NBC Universal. So there were conspiracy theories there. Let me tell you, the majority owner runs the show in these situations.
Yeah, they get to make the calls. But also, this is an aggregate site. The whole point of its existence, rise to popularity is all about taking the reviews and making a little score for us doughheads that don't want to read through it.
And if I can just say, Tom, that sometimes the conspiracy theorist comes back to Time Warner versus Comcast. Where you can see
which
how that all
plays. Is not Warner Brothers. Time Warner is an entirely different company.
and yet again, conspiracy theorists don't worry because the word Warner. Right. No,
exactly. Yeah, it's that simple for them.
I'm not by any way endorsing this.
No, I get it, man.
Oswald works at NBC Universal. This is all what we're saying.
Yeah.
Did you know on the Warner lot they have a grassy knoll? I'm just saying.
Oswald belongs to ABC. They traded Michaels for him. What's that guy's name? The sports announcer? They traded
Michaels. That's right.
Al Michaels was the big guy.
So
you ever notice Al Michaels sounds like Kermit the Frog? Next time you see it, just listen for it. He sounds exactly together? Like Kermit the Frog.
Yeah, they've never been seen together. Where's his hand? I've seen his hand, and that all sounds like I'm going in a real dark place. Never mind, I'm back. Yeah,
I've got my Gatorade. I'm ready.
So here's what I think, and this is what I told my wife. The problem is you never take away things from people on the internet. And if you wanted to premiere the score on the show, you move the show. Mm. You don't move that because the show didn't have a big enough following that people were like, wait a minute, I'm getting it early. But even if it did, getting it early is a good thing, right? So that's what I would have done in that situation. Mm, but yeah. You know, there's a million reasons why maybe that wouldn't work.
Sure. But then, you know, there's a next time this comes up, maybe that's different. And they handle it differently. But again, an aggregate site, all of those reviews that it added up eventually, six to 12 hours later or whatever it was, existed on the internet already and in newspapers and everywhere else. They always exist. This aggregates them. So it's not like this is the pipe connected to the water system. The water is everywhere. They just put it in a bucket and count it. And that's it.
And don't ask me. And Rotten Tomatoes did absolutely nothing in terms of changing the movie. So you either liked it or you didn't. It's not their fault.
Right.
All right, let's move from one hot tomato to a Battlefront. Star Wars Battlefront 2 had some downloadable content you could unlock with in-game credits. Mm. You could either get the in-game credits by playing the game or by a somewhat tortured route of buying crystals to buy loot boxes to get star cards that you could then turn into credits.
Yeah.
EA has made another change to the Battlefront 2 game. The first change was they reduced the amount of time it took to get the credits you need to buy the in-game characters by playing the game. Now they've just gotten rid of the ability to buy the crystals temporarily. They didn't say they're getting rid of it forever, but they're like, fine, when it launches today, you just get things by playing. That's all you get. People didn't like it to the point that an EA post about it on Reddit became the most downvoted comment in Reddit history.
By a huge amount. It was like 300 something thousand. Yeah. By the end, it was like 600. And the highest previous to that was 24,000. It was all. And it had nothing to do with this. But let me just say this real quick. This is deeper than just loot boxes and it being as simple as it's pay to win. The game itself. And none of the fixes they've released are making it so it costs less or costs nothing money-wise, but costs less in terms of time. None of that addresses the core issue, which is the in-game progression system that they built clearly to maximize profit, which is what you do as a game company. I don't fault them for trying to figure out a way to make money on the back end of these things. Games as services are the hot new thing, and many have figured it out. EA is trying to find their way. Where I fault them is it's terrible. Their plan was bad, and the game is left with a whole bunch of systems internally that even if they never charge for a single thing outside the game, it's arduous, it's clumsy, it's makes the process of playing, especially the multiplayer stuff, feel real goofy and weird, and that's my problem with it.
It's arduous, it's clumsy, it's EA.
Yeah, it's EA a little bit. I mean, I don't know. It's a bum. The whole thing's a bummer for sure because Star Wars fans just want what they want. And also, by the way, their stock is up today. So what I actually think is going on, that's not them. That's not the stock market reacting to these announcements. I think that most Star Wars fans who buy one or two video games a year, they might get Madden and whatever has Star Wars on it, are buying this and not even knowing about any of this controversy. They're just going to buy the cool new Star Wars game.
Oh, plenty of them that know about the controversy, downvoted the comment and are mad, are still buying the game.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. There's a lot of mud to sling a lot of directions, but I think EA misstepped the crap out of this, and it's a full blown PR nightmare.
My other wife works for EA. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, it's NBC Universal's did it.
Not involved.
Oh, okay, great. Well, anyway, you guys. Like, I mean, the whole loot box thing has been controversial for a while. This is just the most recent and perhaps biggest example of how that thing can really foobar out of control.
These things happen all the time, but it's not like it's anything new, especially with a company like EA, who has consistently screwed up things and really not known how stuff works. Whether it's just easy signing into like, oh, I'd like to play this game, please join our crappy little service that, you know, you can't get away from or whatever. And it's just, it's one thing on top of another. And it's just, I think people are finally just sick of EA's crap, man. Mm. They just are like, look, dude, just give us our stuff. Do like everybody else and do like a season pass or some sort of garbage like that. I understand they're doing what they're doing to make the amount of money that they do. Fine. Charge me $40 for the game.
Mm. Yeah. Also, there's this this thing in the industry where mobile has started to creep into mainstream. Mobile being a place where you buy a lot of gems and you have five different currencies and half
taking
the time.
The whole freemium idea.
Yeah. And it's not that these things can't be implemented well. Games under Blizzard Activision tend to handle these a little bit better, especially on the Blizzard side. You have, and I'm very biased because I love Blizzard, but you know, when you buy loot boxes in Overwatch, in addition to the $39 base game that you bought, all you're buying is for quick access to more loot boxes, and they're all cosmetic. They don't actually change any of the skill caps or anything in the game. It doesn't make you a better player. It just makes you look different. And I think that's a good medium. People seem to be happy there. I've never had a problem with it. But when they start bringing in, like, buy gems to buy this, then to buy that, and it gets really convoluted and kind of just anti-consumer for a thing you've already spent $60 on. Then the argument comes back, well, games have been $60 for a long time. It's not keeping up with inflation. We can't make AAA titles for $60 a piece anymore at the sales levels we're at. That's the big complaint of the industry. And they're right. It hasn't moved that way. It's weird. Consumers of video games do not expect big price hikes in their products the way it happens with gas or food or any other thing with a sort of incremental inflation over time. So that plays into this in a big way, and they're trying to figure out ways to do it on the back end. Like I say, companies like Blizzard have figured it out. EA is overreaching here, and what this probably means in the long run is that we'll suss it out and find a place that works eventually, but they way overstepped, and they're paying for it now. Or maybe they're not paying for it at all because, like I said, Star Wars is so mainstream, it may not even matter to their bottom line. I don't know.
Yeah, it probably does. I mean, you can't spell hate without EA, but they're still in business. So
yeah, thanks to enough sports games, they'll be around forever.
Oh yeah.
Well, see,
yeah,
that's the thing. It goes all the way back to like the 2K series and stuff like that, where you know they dropped 2K5 for $20. It sold more than just about any football game that was out at the time. And then EA just goes, well, we can't have any of that, and then made sure that they had the NFL license until the end of time.
Yeah.
So they've been known to do shady kind of stuff like this all the time. Where it's
Sim
just like,
City and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Sim City was a nightmare. Oh, they own so many things I love and want to play, but they dink with it in a way. Like, BioWare used to be one of the greatest companies ever. EA bought them. I don't know what BioWare is now. They're not what they used to be, I can tell you that. Like, yeah, it's kind of the everything you touch dies kind of thing with them. And I don't know. Like, it's easy to get cartoony about them being that. I think that they can turn that around. I think that they can live on more than just their FIFA money. But this is not the way, man. And people are...
They don't care, though. I mean, they've shown that. Like, I mean... I guess changing the game mechanics before launch day shows that they're paying attention. They care that much, but they keep doing stuff like this. People keep hating them. They keep bouncing back. They sell games. Yeah. Like I would not expect it to change.
And the only other thing I would say is on the there is a small army of developers, coders, artists, animators across the board at that company making games like this with incredible finesse and art and everything else, and I feel bad because they've made a thing they're proud of, but the business model is interfering with that. And secondly, what usually happens after something like this and after it launches, a bunch of those people get laid off. That's the other thing this industry is really bad at, and EA is not helping. So yeah. Anyway, I hope that this PR nightmare doesn't contribute more to the job loss stuff that sometimes happens in these cycles regardless.
Though that happens, that is usually not connected to the PR cycle.
That's
at all.
True. That's true. Yeah.
Director George Miller is suing Warner Brothers over unpaid earnings related to Mad Max Fury Road. The suit claims that Miller's production company, which is called Kennedy Miller Mitchell, was to receive a $78 million bonus if the final net cost of the movie was less than $157 million. Miller claims that Warner made a bunch of decisions that caused changes and delays, and only the costs associated with Warner's changes caused them to go over the $157 million and shouldn't be taken into account.
Give Miller what he wants. Give him what he wants. He's the most important director of our time. I need a second Mad Max Fury Road.
George Miller is furioso over this.
That's why they quit kicking his name around for Justice League, I guess, was this whole lawsuit.
Yeah.
But I do want to say his production company sounds like somebody that I would hire to like represent me in my personal injury lawsuit or something. It, It doesn't sound like
Kennedy Miller Mitchell.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Man, this kind of stuff happens all the time. Now, to get like a really nice history of it, read Down and Dirty Pictures. It's all about the independent film scene in the 90s and whatnot, and how especially companies like Miramax, they were probably the most egregious of this, of hiding, you know, kind of going, hey, things didn't clear up all the way, or like we didn't reach this certain sort of thing, and really just screwing their filmmakers and stuff out of the money that was actually due them. So it doesn't usually happen for bigger companies like this, because they tend to be a little bit more open with the books and whatnot. But this is, it's not unheard of.
Yeah. But moreover, this is the best, we're talking about Mad Max Fury Road, the best movie of the last 10 years, maybe more.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yes. Multiple thousands of times, it feels like, although it's probably more like dozens. But I love this movie. Big shock. I love this movie more than any movie I've seen in a decade. And it's everything. It was like it was made for me and handed to me specifically. The news that a sequel was coming excited me beyond belief. And now I'm bummed, because if they can't work this out, there's no way there's another movie. Not with him at the helm. Like, they could pull a total, like, well, we control the IP, so let's bring in, you know, Brett Ratner or some a-hole.
Not anymore.
Nobody listens to me, but I always say your contracts need to be all about the gross. All contracts need to be about the gross and not anything else. Because, you know, according to Hollywood accounting, Return of the Jedi lost money. Harry Potter movies have all lost money. You can't do anything with net. You just got to get points of the gross.
Yeah. Well, one way or the other, please make this George Miller, and you're still my favorite director currently working. I'm sure that'll help.
Hey, pick in the city, boy.
Yeah, it takes. I want to thank so many who've helped submit stories for today. Tom, who contributed today to our story pool?
Yeah, currentgeek.reddit.com is the place we find out about all the stuff that we want to talk about on the show. Captain Kipper, T-Glass 1976, Jeff Rose, Strike at Rich One, Titus, Fritz Krieg, and more.
Very
all
nice.
All submitted things that we used on today's show and voted on things, and you can be like them. Just go to currentgeek.reddit.com.
I would recommend it. Okay, we'd like to give a second to our guests to talk about the projects they're working on right now. Does not matter which of you takes this. Which would you like to talk about? What's going on? What's happening with your podcast? And what is it? And, you know,
let
why
Adam
should
go
I listen?
First.
Yeah, Adam, all go
right,
first. Well, sure.
All right. So I've got a lot of stuff, as does Bruce. We do a ton of things, but yet we don't have a ton of people. So get on board, everybody. But first and foremost is Hero Movie Podcast. This weekend, of course, is going to be the new Justice League. So I'm sure everyone wants to get on that, and we'll be reviewing that. Drops on Monday, and we review all kinds of superhero films, from the old stuff to old stuff, like serial type stuff, all the way to the new stuff. And Bruce has pretty much like a comic book encyclopedia inside of his big giant brain, and can relate that back to comics and stuff like that. It's a heck of a lot of fun. So it's smart, but yet really, you know. It can be a little irreverent, but not too bad.
That's
but
cool.
It's nice and family friendly.
Have you guys done? Have you guys talked about the 1949 Batman serial that was eventually a full blown movie? Because that thing is the worst and best thing I've ever seen.
We haven't seen it. I did do like a live screening of that on another show. Let's talk about that one. What a heck of a segue. There
you go.
Over at nerdtalknow.com on usually Mondays, but sometimes it's been going over to Tuesdays. Just because of prior engagements and everything, I do a live show that just brings you right over to Twitch. It's somewhat similar to this. You got your chat room and all that kind of jazz, and we do some nerd talk about this, that, and the other. And, of course, the Film Find at thefilmfind.com. Therefore, on that one, what we do is just new releases every single week, usually 3 to 4 of them, and we talk about old stuff, new stuff. But if there's a movie that's coming out in the theaters, chances are we see it.
Bruce, sounds like you guys are movie fans.
It's true, man, and I've also, I like to write a little bit. I know, Tom, you've written a few books, right?
I have.
Yeah,
I have indeed.
Like, in the whole world of speculative fiction, I lean a little more towards the fantasy, but I've written a few books. The most recent one is called Nerd Spawn Genesis, and it's actually about the personalities on our podcast entering into a totally true fictional world. It's pretty much just your standard story about three podcasters fighting against evil podcasters, and a teenage demonologist gets involved. We find out we all three have a 12-year-old son with superpowers. Pretty standard stuff about protecting oatmeal, fighting evil teamsters, animatronic rats versus nerds. Kind of a literary staple at this point.
Just the tropes, the normal tropes.
Yeah, I'm all about writing to market, if you're familiar with that. Everybody wants that animatronic rat market.
Right. How many oatmeal novels do I have to read?
Yeah. That's amazing. That sounds great. What's the name of the book again?
Nerd Spawn Genesis, and it's the only Nerd Spawn. It's one word. It's the only Nerd Spawn on Amazon until I get tons of imitators.
Well, very nice. Yeah, no, you're going to star all the new trends.
Fun slash fic starts to show up.
Yeah, it's going to happen, whether you like it or not. Well, that's awesome. We will, of course, at the end of the show, give links and all this sort of stuff to help people be driven in the right direction.
All right, before we move forward, it's time to talk about some of our sponsors.
You guys, have you used the all-new FreshBooks yet? Not yet? Well, good, because I got a deal for you. You're racing against the clock. You're trying to get your projects done. Let's say you got three or four of those just cooking. You're like, oh, man, I'm a freelancer with a nightmare schedule. What am I going to do? Trying to prep for a meeting later. You got a mountain of paperwork to get through. Well, welcome to life as a freelancer. Challenging, yes, but our friends at FreshBooks believe the rewards are so totally worth it. The working world has changed. With growth of the internet, there's never been more opportunities for the self-employed. That means you. To meet this need, FreshBooks is excited to announce the launch of the all-new version of their cloud accounting software. And it's been designed from the ground up and custom-built for the exact way you work. Most importantly, you're going to get paid quicker. You're going to be more productive, you're going to be more organized, but you're going to get paid quicker. Create invoices in up to 30 seconds is all. See what your client is doing. He's been able, if he's seen your invoice, well then put an end to the guessing game. You know that it's happened with FreshBooks. FreshBooks is offering a 30-day unrestricted free trial to our listeners. To claim it, just go to freshbooks.com/CG and enter the current geek term. So current geek is what you want to type when you get to the how did you hear about us section. It's freshbooks.com/CG and current geek on how you heard about us. And by Aero, oh man, Aero's great. When you think of hyper-fast Wi-Fi, what do you think of? The single router model just doesn't work for an increasing high bandwidth world. I can tell you that's true at my house. It's simple physics, like light waves, Wi-Fi signals don't have to go very far before they hit a wall. And then you're like, okay, well, these don't go through walls well. Imagine asking a light bulb in your living room to light your master bedroom. It's kind of what you're asking of your Wi-Fi the further you get away from it. Well, since traditional routers don't push software updates to their customers, they also are left to be a little bit vulnerable to cyber attacks. Aero updates automatically so that you don't have to worry. You have the latest features, but you also have the latest security at all times, and you have incredible support over at Aero. It's something the company is very invested in. We're excited to announce that they're excited to introduce the second generation Aero and Aero Beacon. And Aero comes with Aero Home Wi-Fi system started in early 2016. Since then, they've learned from hundreds of thousands of systems, making them smarter, faster, and more reliable. The new Aero 2 or second generation and Aero Beacon allow customers to build a Wi-Fi system that is more perfectly tailored to their home than ever before. More speed and range with the same high quality and elegant design you've come to expect with the addition of a third 5 gigahertz radio. The second generation Aero is now tri-band and twice as fast as the one that came before. It lets you do more, and that's what you want. Expand your coverage to any room, and it's just that easy. Simply plug it into a wall and you're covered. You can add as many Aero beacons as you want. If there's an outlet, there's Wi-Fi. Aero's great. I love them. You'll love them too. For free overnight shipping to the US or Canada, visit Aero.com. That's Eero.com. And check out when you do select overnight shipping and enter current geek. That'll make it for free. We thank Aero for their support. And finally, HelloFresh at HelloFresh.com. Making fantastic meals for you all the time. Well, the truth is you're making them from fresh, amazing ingredients that come directly to your door. We've been using HelloFresh for quite a while and we love them. You're going to love them too. Less than $10 per meal. There's no waste. You get a box at your door, fully recyclable, exact ingredients to the amount you need in 30 minutes or less. You're a hero in your house. It's incredible. We've teamed up with HelloFresh and they're offering everyone in our audience $30 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK30. Go check them out right now. That is CURRENTGEEK30. And that's at HelloFresh.com. Do it today. It's time for this.
America scores and wins.
Man, where's the music? There we go.
Hey, everybody. It's time for us to play a little bit of a game, that game being a pop quiz game. Areas of your expertise have been compiled into a set of questions for each of you. When you get an answer right to one of these questions, you'll hear this sound. And when you get it wrong, you'll hear this. The entire time we do this, Tom will be keeping score by his own rule book with all
not
of its...
Not mine. Oh, it's an ancient rule book.
Ancient rule book. Okay. It's like, he's like, what are you? You're like the keeper of the flame for an ancient ritual since time ad memoriam.
This is just the first couple volumes right here.
Oh, wow. He even... Okay, I just like to make a comment here. If I could mention anything like from our childhood or whatever, and Tom somehow has it within reaching distance of his standing desk, he also has a giant prop book to talk about his rules. That is that is over the top, whole new level stuff. Anyway, so here we go. We're going to start with Adam. Adam, are you ready for your category, sir?
I am ready.
All right. I wish I was. Hold on one second. That would be the real trick here.
An automatic win. There you go.
For some reason. Oh, because I never opened them. I thought maybe they crashed. Okay, here we go. Adam, your questions are all about the 1960s Batman television show.
Good boy.
All right.
Bam.
Adam West, the other guy. Who's the other guy? I forgot his name.
Burt Ward.
Burt Ward. Okay. Those guys. So that's what you're going to deal with here. Mustache on the Joker and all that. So here we go. First question. Who played the villain Egghead in this show?
I can say, was that one of Vincent Price's roles?
You are correct, sir. Well done.
Digging in deep.
It is
you
literally.
You lose a tenth of a point for answering a question with a question.
He thought it was Jeopardy in his defense.
Fair.
Really?
Fair.
That looks a lot like Pat Sajak. We all know that.
Sure. Why not? Wait, Pat Sajak. That's the wrong guy for Jeopardy.
It's a good defense measure, though, because if you're wrong, they could say, no, I was asking. That's not my answer.
Pat Sajak is the Wheel of Fortune guy.
He's Wheel of Fortune.
It's all right. That's totally fine.
Alex Trebek.
Oh, yeah, Alex Trebek. Duh. Here's the next one. How many episodes were made of the 1960s Batman show?
It was 123.
Let's find out. Oh, you're so close. 120 is the answer.
No, he gets 0.9 of a point for that, for being so close.
Yeah, I don't know if they count. They don't count the movie in that, I don't think. The 2-hour, all the world leaders are turned into a pile of salt deal. Yeah, those are great, by the way. All right, what model of car was used for the Batmobile in this series?
Oh, boy. Wouldn't it be great if it were a Corvair? I'm going Corvair.
Well, let's find out. Nope. It was a 1955 Lincoln Futura. Never even heard of that car, but that was it.
Futura.
That's right. Futura Rama. Who played Batgirl in the show's third season?
Oh, boy. The difference.
Yeah, they changed them around a lot.
We're going to say... Dorothy Hamill.
You are incorrect. Shockingly enough, incorrect about not being Dorothy Hamill. It was Yvonne Craig.
No. You get 0.5 of a point for creating a new childhood fantasy for many of us.
Or at least for Tom. All right, final question. What was the filming location for the entrance to the Batcave?
Carlsbad Cabin or something?
You are incorrect. It was the Bronson Caves. It's also been used in lots of other shows, including Star Trek and Twin Peaks.
Does it count that my dog's name is Bronson?
No.
Yes. One tenth of a point.
Sorry, I forget.
Name Bronson.
Tom's got that giant book. He knows the rules. I shouldn't try to pipe in on those. All right, you did really well, but I believe Bruce may turn the tables here.
Uh-oh.
Bruce, are you ready for your questions?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Why is that doing that? All right, your category is 1960s Marvel animated television shows.
Ooh, good.
All right, I used to love these. I've only ever seen them on YouTube. I didn't even see them when I was a kid, but I love them. Anyway, how many episodes were made for the Marvel superhero series?
17.
You are incorrect. It says 65 here.
I was only off by a few.
Yeah.
So you get a tenth of a point.
How many character segments were there in the Marvel superhero series? Each segment, by the way, focused on a particular character. So how many segments were there in the series?
Three.
Let's see. Three is incorrect. The answer is Captain America, the Incredible Hulk, Invincible Iron Man, the Mighty Thor, and Prince Namor, the Submariner. That made five. Five total. Your next question.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Your next question is, who?
I agree with the facts that were stated before me. Oh, good.
Who provided the voice of Spider-Man in the 1960s series?
Oh, that would have been Estes Kefauver.
You are incorrect. It was Paul Soles.
I was
close. No, but you get 0.8 points for an Estes Kefauver reference. That never goes right.
It's also really fast with it. He also played the fantastic Fakir, Ox, and Vulture. I don't know who the fantastic Fakir is.
We also would have accepted Adlai Stevenson.
Oh, very nice. I've always accepted him. All right, your next or second to the last question. What channel did the Spider-Man cartoon originally air on?
We're talking about the Filmation, the old one.
Correct. The original, like, old school. It was still 60s, but yeah.
I've got a 33% chance, so I'm going to say Fox.
You are incorrect, but I take the good. That was really good.
I have a 33% chance, so let me make it zero.
Yeah. ABC is the correct answer. Final question. I'm going to sneeze. Final question. Oh. Here it comes. I have
you get a point for having to listen to that.
Yeah, I have a button for that too. What was I should have pushed that. All right. Who composed the iconic Spider-Man theme song? No, that's Batman.
From the Electric Company?
Spider-Man, that one.
Coming from Spider-Man. Nobody knows who you
are. No, that's the not company. The one. That's the
Never one.
Yeah, it's the Spider-Man. It was either the Ramones or They Might Be Giants.
Well, let's find out if that's correct. I have an idea, but let's see. Yeah, Paul Francis Webster and Robert Harris.
That's They Might Be Giants.
The original members of They Might Be the Ramones.
They might be the Ramones. I'd listen to that, man. All right, you've both done well, but one of you did better than the other.
You've both done the quiz.
You've both done the quiz. Congratulations. But Tom, you scored all up at the end. Things have gone a different way before. How'd they do today?
Oh, no, we ended up with a very close race here. Bruce tallied up 1.9 points to Adam's 2.4.
Wow, look at that.
Congratulations.
High scores, guys, one and all. Well done. That's our game. Now it's forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
This is where we predict the future. It used to be a show. Now it's a segment. And we talk about far-flung, near future. It doesn't matter, really. And it doesn't even matter what category we talk about it in. Adam has submitted this one. And I'll read it, and then I want you to explain. It says, in the future, going to the movie theater will be the equivalent of attending a play in 2017. I actually think I, even on the surface of this, kind of agree. But let's dig a little deeper. Why do you think that's the case?
This seems to be the way that we're trending more and more. I mean, take a look at, for example, Netflix. Netflix now is putting so much money into their programming. And here's the thing. They're not bad stuff. You got everything from the Gerald's Game to the big stuff that's coming out with Will Smith and futuristic, whatever the heck it's called. No one's going to really watch it, but whatever. Mm. Here's the thing. We're making bigger and better things all the time. You've got Disney going off. They're doing their own streaming service and not too awful long. The theater experience, as somebody who goes to the theater easily, last year I saw 150 movies in the theater, just to give you an idea of how often I go.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. People are going less and less and less. And TVs at home are getting just better and better and better. Mm. We are going to get to the point where movies in the future, I'm going to say maybe 10, 15, maybe 20 years in the future, will be like, it'll be like going to a play. You're going to go there. It's going to be opulent. You're going to have really nice stuff. It's going to be above and beyond. People might get dressed up. You don't know. But it's going to cost a premium price, and that's when you're going to go out and do that. You're still going to have that. That's going to be an option for you to do. But by and large, most of your movie watching will be from home. I mean, we have, you know, heck, I got, you know, a sound system that's, I could say, rivals most of the, at least audio quality wise, most of what I hear in the theaters and stuff like that. You know, so many of us have 4K TVs and things like that. Projectors are super cheap these days. I just don't see us going to the theater nearly as much as we already, you know, are trending down towards. I don't see that happening more and more in the future. I see much, much less of it.
So this has come up before on the show with other guests and Tom and I about the experience becoming more of a boutique experience, things like the Alamo Drafthouse sort of leading the way in this regard, making it more of a specialized experience, whether that's the kinds of things and services you get there or just the fact that it becomes more antiquated, like vinyl disc collection. People are still buying records today in quote unquote record numbers if you compare it to when it had its first big drop off after tapes happened. So why not movies? Anyone disagree with this assessment? I think I agree with it. I think the future of that is going to be special dates and stuff like that.
The whole boutique thing is the answer, man. You know, a lot of theaters nationwide, even in little towns like where I live now, you know, once a week they'll have something like Ghostbusters or Back to the Future, Home Alone around the holidays. I think the first Harry Potter movie is getting shown, and there's stuff like that on the big screen will pull me in. And I think it's going to go more and more kind of like that hipster direction, like you said, like vinyl and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but here's the problem, though, right? Like, right now, that entire industry depends on big, giant, loud superhero movies like the kinds you guys cover on your show.
Yeah, and those are still going to be, you know, events. You know, when we say it's going to be like theater, Hamilton does great box office. So there's still going to be stuff that does great box office, but it's going to be more of an event. I think the ticket prices may go up a little bit. The number of weeks that those big things are showing may reduce a little bit, but it's still going to be kind of an event. It might even get to the point where they want to limit the supply to the point that things are intentionally sold out to make their have like this artificial demand for it and drive up the prices a little bit.
That's where you'll go for your blockbusters and things of that measure, but like your more independents, your more kind of smaller budgeted things, you know, things that are less than, you know, $40 million, those will go directly to streaming of some sort.
Feel like we're already there.
Don't forget, right now ticket prices for movie theaters are super cheap. Granted, not relatively speaking, right? When you think back, like, I used to pay like $2.50 to see a movie, or I used to pay $7 to see a movie. This is ridiculous. $20 now. But compare it to Hamilton. That's $100 base.
No, that's like $3.50 for a bad seat, man.
Compare it to any music concert that you want to go to. Like, that's movie theater prices will go up. I don't even think they'll go that far up, but they will go up to make up the difference, and they will be events. Just the fact that we still have opera. Right? Yeah. Plays didn't kill opera. Movies didn't kill opera. TV didn't kill opera. There's still opera. There's still enough people that like it. It's in fewer places, but it's still there. Movies aren't going away. Yeah. But I think this prediction is dead on.
In all fairness, I only see like 7-8 operas a year now compared to when I was growing up.
Not as many as we used to, right?
I love being around the idea of around the opera offices. They're all just going, you heard about this new thing called television? We are screwed, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we're already
at opera. They're like, this new thing called Shakespeare. They don't even sing.
Yeah.
Well, that about. Have you heard of auto-tune?
It's too good. Well, there you go. I think it's a fine prediction and one that will come true. Before we go today, we'd like to do an email at the end of the show. Got one here from pal of mine. I don't know his real name. I assume that's a name.
No, I think it's Palofmine.
Oh, Palofmine.
It's Italian.
All right.
Sweet. Probably loves the opera.
He says, this came to us at currentgeek@gmail.com. He says, hey guys, here's hoping that there are zero Jedis in the new Star Wars trilogy. Who's with me? I think I'm with him. I want something new from this new Rian Johnson-helmed trilogy that was announced, but we know nothing else about.
What they'll do is they'll give us something that's not called a Jedi, but it's a Jedi.
Maybe.
They'll call it a Jondu warrior, but it'll still be a Jedi.
Because you had your stuff from the other one. What's the other one called? Shoot. The Rogue One. Rogue One had your guy that was like a failed Jedi, kind of, the blind dude. Yeah.
No, he was a part of the Jedi religion. He just wasn't a trained Jedi.
Sure.
Here's what we talked about on Let's Talk About Star Wars this week with Garrett and Jenny. We think they're probably going to the unknown regions, which they've been hinting at constantly in the books and in the comics. And that's where Thrawn's people come from. There's no Jedi over there.
Yeah.
So unless they do something, unless his series goes back to the origins of the Jedi, perhaps, like really far in the past, I have a feeling Palofmine is going to get their wish.
Yeah, probably.
One rule, no Skywalkers. Other than that, just bring it on. I mean, I love the Skywalkers, get it all good, but here's the thing, we've had our time, 9 movies, let's wrap this bad boy up, send it off to school, it's done, graduated. Give 100. Us anything outside of Skywalker stuff, and I'm on board.
Yeah.
I just like to catch up with that Harvey Korman character with 6 arms that cooks a lot.
Yeah. The rump, the one about the bantha rump. Wasn't that who that was?
Yeah, like spin, spin, swish, or something like that.
I have some. I have a clip right here. Here you go.
I would suggest then that old popular holiday favorite, the Panther Lump.
Yeah, remember? And that was him, wasn't it? That was who you said? Harvey Korman, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, here he is again.
I'm going to be using the tenderest cut of the panther, the loin. The loin is very tasty and serves four nicely.
All right, there you go.
Not enough laughing in that thing.
Yeah, we'll see Palofime if... or Fine.
Be like, it's called Greg. You just read it wrong.
I feel like I need to ask my doctor if Palofine is right for me. Anyway, yeah, I'm all about this idea of let's do some new stuff. It can, and Jedis can be part of that stuff, but it doesn't have to be Skywalkers. I think that's the middle part I'm willing to make. I understand their need to make these movies have iconic Star Wars things in them, and you cannot take Jedi out of Star Wars very easily. But you could go very, you know, dark streets of Coruscant, Bounty Hunter, for all I care. Like, I want to go,
yeah, maybe.
I want to go somewhere else.
The TV show different than the new trilogy too.
Yeah, that's true. And that there's real opportunity there to go to new places.
I want the TV show to be Smugglers.
Yeah.
And we're always visiting new planets and stuff like that. Yeah. That's high.
It's going to be an alien version of Friends.
Yeah. Even better. Right. Somebody can say, I can't think of it.
They just go down and do death sticks at Central Perk. Yep.
The Central Perk's just in the middle of the known universe instead of...
Well, it's okay. In the middle of Coruscant. Now it's central both in three dimensions.
Yeah.
Look, Death Sticks took my dad, okay?
I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to make fun.
Those Death Sticks, you got to watch out. Anyway, there you go. It's all droids. Hey, that's what you do. All droid TV show. That's it.
I already did that.
And all voiced by Anthony Daniels because he just insists upon.
Uatu. Yeah, because he'll never die. He's with us forever.
And Gungans.
Oh no, please. Please. We've gone too far. We've said too much. Anyway, there you go. Thank you for that email, pal of mine, / the other way we said it. If you want to send your own emails into the show, everybody listening, you sure can. Currentgeek@gmail.com is the email address. We'll read them right here. Before we get out of here, a quick link check with our guests. Where can people find your show / shows? And where do you want them to poke around on Twitter or wherever? Give us the names.
Hear Movie Podcast, hearmoviepodcast.com, The Film Find, and if you like the AMC show Preacher, preacherpodcast.com. We do that show as well.
Oh, very nice. I do like that show.
And on Twitter, people can find me at Chubby Wizard is the Twitter handle. Amazon.com/author/ Bruce Leslie or chubbywizard.com. Just remember, Nerd Spawn, one word.
Nice. Nerd Spawn, don't forget. Tom Merritt, anything you'd like to mention?
Well, as Bruce mentioned, I write the book, and you can buy the book at TomMerrittBooks.com. The latest one's called Pavaria. It's about a colony ship that's damaged, and a lot of people don't realize they're on a ship. And if you want the audio book, there will be one eventually. Right now, I'm recording it on my writer's Patreon, patreon.com/AceDetect.
Oh, very nice. So people can hear that as you progress. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Look at Tom working all the angles. This is great. Hey, I want to thank everybody for listening to the show. If you'd like to find more of what I've got going, you can find me at Scott Johnson on Twitter. Of course, frogpants.com. Got some cool stuff coming up. We hope you're having a fantastic lead into the holidays. There will be a show Friday, I think, right?
Not a week from today. No,
no, no, no, not because it's Black Friday. Duh.
Both of us will be in line at Walmart together.
Yeah. Yes. But it's also family apocalypse for the Americans. Everyone's going to be busy. So no show next week. But we'll be back soon with more, including a new movie episode coming up. I know you guys have been enjoying those. Lots of great feedback on those. And thank you guys for that. I think that's going to do it for us. Let's see. I have music to play. Here you go. Hey, this is our theme on the outro. Hey, currentgeek.com is the website. Current Geek on Twitter. Scott Johnson, Ace Detect. And don't forget that email address once again, currentgeek@gmail.com. That will do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we discussed this week's news regarding Twitter pulling verified badges from some users and reevaluating how those badges are granted to users of this social network. Twitter has continued to evolve with recent times, including the notable shift to allow 280-character tweets for all users instead of the long-standing 140. This week, the changes continued as Twitter shut down submissions for verification, which is the open process to request that your account get a verified badge indicating that you are true source material. In other words, the fake Donald Trump and Miley Cyrus accounts don't get the verified check, but those run by the actual celebrities or their PR agents do. The reasons for this shutdown were explained as follows. Twitter wants to introduce and apply new guidelines for verification, and also clear the decks of verified accounts that do not follow Twitter's rules and terms of service. For example, Twitter has begun removing the badge from users for allegedly promoting hate or violence, and for engaging in or inciting harassment. What made this story hit the news was the types of users who were in the first group to lose the verification badge. Many of those users were far-right commentators or public figures such as Jason Kessler, who organized the Charlottesville March, and Richard Spencer, a white supremacist. Essentially, Twitter is deeming some radicals to be promoting hate, while other radicals have not yet faced the same kind of repercussion. So legally, is there any challenge that can be made by these users who have a status taken away? The short answer is probably not. As a preliminary matter, tweets are not inherently protected free speech under the First Amendment. If this removal of a status badge is seen as a censorship of the speech, it is not done by a government or a company acting on behalf of a government. There's no freedom of tweets in the Constitution, last I checked. Twitter and other private social networks have the right to regulate their channels as they wish, as generally set forth in the terms of service for these programs. In the case of Twitter, the rules applied explicitly prohibit sharing a large number of things, like misuse of others' intellectual property, excessive graphic violence, threats, hate, or harassment materials, and private information. Twitter has full latitude to suspend or terminate accounts that do not follow these rules, above and beyond the removal of a verification badge. If you use Twitter, you agree to abide by those rules, and for these users, that has allegedly not been happening. As such, the users likely have no reasonable recourse to overcome content control applied in this way by Twitter, and it would be similar with all the major social networks. The bottom line is, as much as social networks like Twitter feel like the public open forum, they are still privately owned channels of communication with rules and terms of service that provide wide latitude for controlling content and the actions of users. The world is likely a better place without fringe or radical dialogue, but one hopes that Twitter's new rules and the application of the verification system can treat all sides fairly in this process. Finally, if you want to find a further discussion of this story, and lots of other fun geeky topics, please check out my appearance on the Ritual Misery podcast from this week. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.